Welcome to Create Your Reality, the show that empowers you with information on how to drive your brain and create a more purposeful, joyful, and fulfilling life for yourself in the process. Your host is Lynn Crocker. Each week, Lynn demystifies your brain's processes and shows you how to utilize tools that you already possess to identify habitual thought patterns that are not serving you. You'll hear from Lynn and other industry experts who will help you understand how your thoughts create your reality and how you can use this awareness to change your life from the inside out. This is all right here on Amazing Women of Power Radio, the world's leading positive programming network, powered by Raven International.
Hi, and welcome to Create Your Reality. I'm your host, Lynn Crocker. Today I'm chatting with Emily Cortez. Emily is a motivational speaker and owner of Call of the Wild Adventures, Inc., an all-women's adventure travel company. Emily's mission is to utilize positive outdoor experiences to inspire women to face challenges, take risks, and break down the internal barriers that keep them from achieving their dreams. Today, Emily and I are going to talk about the struggles that she went through as she embarked on creating her own reality for herself, one that took her away from the world of financial services and into the role of inspiring others to do more than they ever thought possible. Emily has a lot of great insights to offer, so let's go ahead and dive in. Hi, Emily. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I am really excited to talk about what you do and kind of how you got to where you are. But let's start a little bit at the beginning and share a little bit about your personal journey and how you got to where you are today.
Sure. Well, the first thing about it is that it was definitely not overnight. And I think a lot of times people assume, oh, you're doing this great thing, and one day you decided and turned it into your reality. But sometimes it takes a little while. Mm-hmm. The short version, hopefully, of this is that over the last 10 years or so, I began to do more and more in the outdoors, and in particular with mountaineering. And I'm a pretty small female. I mm-hmm. describe myself as soft around the edges, but I learned so much and got so much empowerment and confidence and belief in my leadership ability and decision-making and all of that from my mountaineering experiences. And I just kept climbing slightly harder mountains, slightly harder, more committing, needed more training, needed more experience. Mm-hmm. But that's really what I credit with my ability to go from kind of being a wallflower and being afraid of authority and knowing how to work hard but not really knowing how to stand up for myself. Mm-hmm. And it was the mountaineering that really shifted that perspective. Mm-hmm. And then also realizing that the finance world in which I worked for 2 decades just was not fulfilling. Mm-hmm. And when I started to lead trips for other people and seeing the impact that I could have on others by creating a space for them to have similar kinds of experiences, and then in particular, seeing how the impact on women seemed to be much more dramatic than that on men. Like, it was great, whoever had a good time, learned a lot, built their confidence, but the women just seemed to have so much come in with a lot less and leave with a lot more. And that was very inspiring to me. So that's when I started to believe that, well, maybe I really do have a purpose.
Yeah, wow.
And maybe following my passion, you know, is part of that purpose.
Mm-hmm. It is definitely. I mean, you made a couple of good points, and I want to get a little more into your story because you did have an injury that kind of brought all
yeah.
to the surface. But the things that you were saying about, you know, being outdoors and especially women being outdoors, really coming to terms with the fact that they can be resourceful, they can take care of themselves, and then it's sounding like they're able maybe to take that back into their, quote-unquote, the real world, back into society and have a different level of self-empowerment from what you were demonstrating that they could do.
Absolutely. And there's something about, even on a co-ed trip, you get that. But now with Call of the Wild Adventures, when it's all female participants and all female guides, mm-hmm. it's just really enhanced,
yeah.
or that effect is kind of multiplied. Mm-hmm. And it's not about not liking men. It's about giving women the space to have physical challenge, to express their fears and work through them, to have a tough day and not feel like a burden. Mm-hmm. It just seems like there are some things with gender dynamics that can get in the way of the lessons being as pivotal or as great or coming to the surface as quickly, mm-hmm. if there is a co-ed environment.
Mm-hmm.
And a funny little story is I do in international trips use local partners, and there it's very difficult to find female guides. So we'll always have somebody from Call the Wild that's sort of the female intermediary, and a lot of male local guides. And they're totally awesome. They love the clients. Everybody, you know, really grows to respect and appreciate each other. But my one guy in Nepal, Norbu, says to me one day, he's completely incredulous that on the trips in the States there are no men around, and it's just the women leading and the women carrying the weight. And he's mm-hmm. like, but Dee Dee, which is sister, you know, mm-hmm. what happens if something goes wrong and you don't have any men around? And it was beyond his comprehension yeah. that a group of women would ever go out and do anything hard without a man around to help. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the point. And that is to your point about the self-reliance and learning those things and going, wow, you know, we are okay. And if something happens, we will figure it out ourselves. And, mm-hmm. you know, just because on average women are biologically not as strong as men does not mean that you can't be in the outdoors.
Correct.
And do it a little differently. Maybe you go a little slower. Maybe you carry a little weight. Maybe if somebody gets hurt, that the guide doesn't just throw the second pack on their shoulder and hike off with two packs. I can't
yeah.
do that, you know. And I've seen some big guys do that.
Mm-hmm.
No, we'll have to divide up those contents and work together as a team. So there are many other ways that you can operate in the wilderness and be very successful without just being, you know, this huge brute of power and strength.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes having the huge brute power strength can be something that person is relying on, that maybe it's going to be taken from them at some point. Because what if they, you know, a big strong man breaks a leg?
Well, yes.
And he doesn't have the skills that you're teaching the women to be resourceful, to have the teamwork, to have that camaraderie, and it's okay to be weak, it's okay to be strong, and then support each other. I really like that.
Yeah.
That feels really
well,
good.
I honestly think sometimes it can be a handicap, because sometimes it's the men, sometimes it's the younger people, sometimes it's those that are super fit, that are marathoners and triathletes, who can just pull on this innate or genetically, you know, being genetically gifted in athleticism, just pull on that, and they don't actually have to be smart.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to think
right.
as strategically. They don't have to prepare as much. They don't worry as much about the consequences of not getting
mm-hmm.
camp. And sometimes then you can get in much bigger trouble
mm-hmm.
because you just rely on that physical strength and you don't have to become a more well-rounded
right.
Outdoors person. And I think that all of this translates back to the, I call it the real world too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where you have to think about your team and who's the strongest and who's the slowest and who's got the skills and who's got the endurance and
mm-hmm.
who's the best in times of crisis, who needs a little more support. Like, all of that comes back to trying to achieve, you know, corporate or nonprofit or other organizational objectives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's a great skill set to learn and then take, that, like you said, somebody can take back against the real world and apply within their lives.
Yeah, I'll digress on one other little story where I don't usually do one-day workshops, but we did one that was hiking and zip lining, and the six women that signed up for them self-selected perfectly to be absolutely terrified of zip lining.
Oh, yeah.
And we spent the morning doing a lot of, like, body awareness mm-hmm. and moving meditation and getting in touch with your breath in order to prepare for the zip lining later.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the women did absolutely fantastic. You could tell that they were just scared shitless.
Mm-hmm.
And they did it anyway because they were in a supportive environment, and they pulled on some of those tools about just breathing and trying not
mm-hmm.
to, you know, let the hamster wheel in your head get away from you of all the things that can go wrong.
Yeah.
And at the end, one gal said to me, Chieftain, and I quote, you know, nothing in the office is going to seem scary this week after facing this fear.
Wow.
And, you know, and that's yeah. just zip lining. And I've had all sorts of stories from mm-hmm. snowshoeing and hiking and trekking and things
sure.
like that. But there are these things that just hit you in a more visceral way
mm-hmm.
that stick with you better, I think, than just always. We're always in our head. We're very cerebral. We're rationalizing. We're talking. But sometimes if you have this experience that's connected to your body,
mm-hmm.
it just sits with you in a different way, and I think can be really impactful.
Yeah, and you were just mentioning, again, a lot of us are in our heads, or human beings are in their heads, and we're thinking about a lot
mm-hmm.
of different things. And so perhaps this woman, through moving through this challenge, was maybe able more to keep track of what was going on in her head, because it sounded like she had to do that to be able to do this, to go on the zip
mm-hmm.
lines, to pay attention, as you're saying, to the hamster wheel. What are you saying? What kind of fears are you making up? And then discount them and move on.
Yeah, it's a very valuable skill.
Yeah, absolutely. So you had a little bit of an experience, or a big experience, with this kind of thing for yourself. Like, you had a physical injury. So as we've, you know, brought listeners up to date, you were in the corporate world, finance. You discovered a love of outdoors, discovered a love of challenging yourself in this way, and then something happened that caused you to really have to take a step back. So talk about that.
Yes, that was the catalyst, and I think that most people have some kind of catalyst, mm-hmm. whether that, you know, something happens to a family member, or near-death experience, or whatever the case may be. It doesn't sound all that dramatic, but I tore my ACL while snowshoeing. The ACL is one of the ligaments in the knee that's pretty important.
Yeah.
And I had to have surgery to correct it, and at the time I heard the diagnosis, oh, it's going to be 4 to 6 months on the couch recovering, and I was devastated.
Yeah.
Absolutely devastated, because now I'd come into this place where the physical activity was so important for my own peace and decompression and processing of things going on in my life. And what I didn't know was that 4 to 6 months would turn into nearly 3 years. And I just am one of those people that doesn't recover well from surgery. Some people bounce back and it's amazing, and some people don't. But along the way, while I was dealing with my work environment and the time off for surgery and needing some physical accommodations at work, I was kind of pushed to travel far earlier than I really should not. I should not have been crutching through airports and trying to find ice in hotel rooms.
Yeah, right.
and then they were just getting really frustrated. Why do you still have to be going to physical therapy? Well, because I'm still limping. I can't hike. I have trouble walking from my car to the parking lot, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I became more and more dissatisfied with a few things. One was the lack of support in the corporate world. If, God forbid, I've got cancer someday.
Yeah, right.
I can't even recover from my knee surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And without the ability to get out each weekend and go and decompress in the mountains, mm-hmm. what they didn't understand was that time of doing the physical activity was so important for me to decompress. And I could come back and have the ability to be re-energized, have new perspective, and handle a lot of pressure. I had one of the highest client loads and the most travel out of the consultants at my last firm.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember hearing something come back to me where one of the owners of the firm thought I didn't have a sense of urgency about my work.
Oh, wow.
Because if I could go ice climbing on the weekend, clearly I had enough energy to do that, and I didn't need the weekend to decompress from working hard during the week.
Oh, wow, that is just, yeah, that's corporate logic right there.
Yeah, and it was like the exact opposite. So now, you know, as I'm trying to recover from this knee surgery, I can't even go out and do easy hikes.
Mm-hmm.
I had to face work mm-hmm. without the ability to decompress mm-hmm. or re-energize for it. And I realized that I was pretty miserable, and it just, not only did it not feed me, it was kind of sucking. It's, you know, had the sucking sound of
right.
my energy and even my soul. So mm-hmm. I decided that I simply had to leave, and I wasn't sure how exactly that was going to happen. But I began to squirrel away money pretty ruthlessly mm-hmm. and continue to try to focus on my rehabilitation. And I happened to be on the board, the advisory board of Call of the Wild already. So I knew about the company.
Mm-hmm.
I knew the former owner had struggled with it because she bought it right before the recession and the economy tanked. So
yeah.
she'd had a tough time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was basically all those stars aligning within a six-month period of knowing that Call of the Wild was for sale, having been saving very aggressively, and my knee getting better. And then I also had thought a lot about taking this time back and said, if I'm going to redo my entire life, I'm going to rip off the Band-Aid and start from scratch, not just go half-assed and be like, yeah, I'm going to do this company, but I'm still going to live in a city and I'm still going to have the headaches of that.
Uh-huh.
So part of my visualization was moving to Bend, Oregon. So I also, you know, came up here and looked around, and the real estate market was in shambles, which was great if you were a buyer.
Yeah, exactly.
And I bought a house while I still had a regular job in order to be underwritten for a loan.
Right.
And I just, like, you know, people, I sort of sometimes feel very undeserving of the admiration of like, wow, that was so amazing what you did. But it just felt like, step by step, okay, what do I need to do? And moving to another state and buying a house is intimidating enough. All right, I'll find a real estate agent. Okay, I'll go up for 1 weekend and look around. Okay, now I like this one.
Yeah.
I'll put an offer on, and you just chip away at it. It's kind of like a mountain. You can't climb it all in one go. You have to figure out what it is, what it involves. What gear do you need? What teammates do you need? What kind of preparation do you need to do? What's a reasonable time frame?
Yeah.
And then you have to start taking just one step at a time in order to get there.
Yeah, and that's a great analogy, and it goes back to what you were saying in the beginning, that this didn't happen overnight. It might appear to something on the outside that you just made these decisions and quickly got there, but it is a slow process, and as you're saying, you took one chunk at a time, and so that really does tie back into those lessons that the women are learning when they're, and we'll talk a little bit about Call of the Wild towards the end here because I love the organization, but the women that are signing on for these challenges, signing on for these hikes, signing on for these adventures, I imagine they're going through the same process of moving through their fears and moving through the things that they feel are limitations. So talk a little bit about your experience with that, with, getting into somebody's head and helping them unpack the big Samsonite luggage set that they've built up against
being
able to do something physical.
There's a lot of unpacking to do.
I know. Yeah, there are.
But you reminded me of, like, one of the big lessons along my own journey was that you can't do it alone.
Mm.
And I think that ties into why they come to somebody like Call of the Wild, or why they're open to being guided and wanting that kind of support. So one piece that I left out was that when I was in the middle of this sort of quagmire of negativity and stress about my knee and would I ever walk normally again, could I ever get to the outdoors again, I did reach out and hire a coach, Greg Swanson, who calls himself a warrior mind coach.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very attracted to him because he had what I call the woo-woo California side.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Of like meditation and working with, your subconscious and like you could have the best laid plans, but if deep down you really don't believe, you're not going to be successful. But he wasn't so new agey that I thought he wouldn't get my ambition.
Right.
And, some people are like, oh, why do you need to do these crazy things in the mountains? And just don't get that aspect of wanting to do really hard, really challenging, sometimes slightly dangerous things.
Mm-hmm.
And just if you take one look at him, he like kind of looks like a Navy SEAL.
Yeah.
So like, whoa, a Navy SEAL that does neuro-linguistic programming, he's my guy, So I realized, I can't do this alone. I couldn't pull myself out alone of this, quicksand of negativity.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, I was in too deep. So I'm really sympathetic when I see women going through things like that, when they're stuck in that cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't always believe that I could ever have possibly been there.
Yeah.
But I have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I know it's hard, and sometimes it just depends on the person where you can say, kind of harshly, just knock it off. It's actually not fun to be around you when you are performing well, but you're so stressed out about yourself and complaining and vocalizing and all that. Just, knock it off and enjoy the moment. But that doesn't work with everybody.
Right.
With others, you really need to listen to them and understand, and why do you feel that way? And let's talk about that. And, what's the worst thing that happens if you are the slowest person?
Mm-hmm.
Can we turn around? Yes. Can you take a rest day? Yes. So why don't you just try?
Yeah.
And let's go as far as we can go. And then they usually will surprise themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Or there's the simple fact of, if you are trying to keep up with the fastest person and you're not as fit as the fastest person, you're going to feel really tired.
Yeah,
and it's kind of demoralizing.
Yeah.
So realizing what's your pace, what is comfortable for you, it's not about competing all the time. It's about enjoying as well. There's so many ways you can go with that in terms of you need to be prepared and not take things for granted, but then once you show up for something, that's all a sunk cost. You're there, and you can't change your preparation at that point. The only thing that you can change is your attitude about the situation.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a very powerful thing to have in your control.
It is, and that's definitely the focus of the show, and one of my passions is you cannot always control what happens to you, but you can control how you respond to it. if you choose to control that.
Yep.
And so that's what you're saying. So it's, I imagine it's difficult for some women. I'm thinking just, you know, putting a person together in my mind of a corporate leader, a, you know, heavy hitter in some kind of a corporate environment, going on one of these hikes and discovering that she is, in fact, not as fit or not as fearless as some of the other people on the team. I bet that's really hard for her to step, take that step back and maybe views herself as a burden to the group or, you know.
Yeah. Well, that, I mean, basically that exact person is on many trips.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually most of the women. But in January, there was a woman who's a corporate attorney who came on a snowshoeing trip. And by most standards, the snowshoeing trips are really mellow unless you've never snowshoed before. You're worried about being with a group. Mm-hmm. We do a snowshoe that's about 7 miles, and it's at altitude. So mm-hmm. we go a very reasonable pace. Everybody makes it, but it can feel tough if you've never done it before.
Mm-hmm.
And so here's this corporate attorney who's, you know, I called her later because I knew her and asked her how it had gone.
Yeah.
And she said, you know, I learned something really important because I realized quickly I was clearly the least fit person on the entire trip.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going really slowly, and the guides would not let me give up. And they just encouraged me to go at my pace.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew that if I had been with my husband or with my friends, I would have turned myself around.
Oh, wow.
And I would not have gotten to see what everyone else did get to see, which is this amazing mm-hmm. place called Dewey Point, and the whole valley and Tenaya Canyon open up beneath you, and
wow.
there's snow everywhere. It's really gorgeous.
Yeah.
And she wrote on her postcard to herself, because I have everybody write a little postcard, just not a huge, like, letter to self thing, but just
yeah.
what's your, like, one little takeaway, one little moment of peace, one little thing that in a few months you want to remind your stressed out, overwhelmed, multitasking self. You've completely forgotten about this.
Girl. Exactly, you're going to go
and,
back.
And she wrote to herself, she said she wrote, stop turning yourself around.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. And the other interesting thing is, like, almost every single woman that calls me has the same exact concerns about being the weak one on the trip and slowing everybody down.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're all worried about that, then you're in pretty good shape, because
yeah.
they'll often express their concerns to the others, and they're like, oh, I'm that person. Wait, no, I am. So it, we tend to not attract, like, really aggressive,
mm-hmm.
super self-sufficient. That, you know, those gals are off doing their own trips.
Mm-hmm.
But the ones that want this kind of challenge, or they want to
yeah.
see something that's really beautiful, or the logistics are difficult,
mm-hmm.
and they come and they want to be part of a group, and it tends to, the women self-select very well for these trips to be the kind that's worried about their own participation, but also supportive of others.
Yeah.
So it creates a really good environment.
It sounds like, because I imagine, because I, of course, too, would be one of those women, like, especially like a ziplining thing, I'm thinking I'm going to get up there, I'm going to be hysterical, I'm going to embarrass myself, I'm going to make it difficult for everybody, so I'm just not going to go. But if somebody has that kind of an attitude going in, then of course they're going to be supportive of somebody else that they see feeling similar to them. Or
mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I imagine it's wonderful. So we've got a couple more minutes here. I do want to talk about Call of the Wild. Talk about, you know, the different types of trips there are. I know the website is callwild.com for listeners out there, but tell me about what you do.
All right. Well, we basically do, it's human-powered recreation, so everything we do is active. And again, it's not meant for the necessarily for the woman who's, like, doing the Ironman.
Right.
That's the impression that I kind of fight, that you have to be uber fit. But no, you've got to be active. You need to love being outdoors. You don't have to be uber fit. And there's a wide range of difficulty. So we have lodge trips where you stay in a hotel and you go day hiking, or maybe do a little kayaking, a little wine tasting, but
yeah.
it's still active.
Uh-huh.
So you go, well, hopefully on this trip I won't actually, like, gain weight. Because I've done a few trips where it's all about food, and I come back going, I gotta lose weight for my vacation. And then you kind of graduate into what we call base camping trips, where you sleep in a tent,
mm-hmm.
and then you go and you do day hikes. And that's also a nice entry level, because if you're, like, really tired from a hike, you can take a rest day. It's
yeah.
pretty mellow.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got what we call trekking trips, and that usually involves hiking at altitude, typically in a developing country. Well, we have some in Europe as well. But you're hiking from place to place, It usually is up in the mountains and usually at altitude. So it requires a bit more fitness, a little bit more willingness for a rugged environment, Sometimes we sleep in tents, sometimes we sleep in huts. Mm-hmm. But it's a little more committing because you have to go from one place to the next, and you have to have forward progress. Mm-hmm. Pace isn't as important, but ability to complete is. Mm-hmm. And then I would say the hardest trips are the backpacking trips, because you have to carry all of the weight on your own back and, again, have to keep moving forward with the itinerary. It's mm-hmm. very challenging but possible if somebody has enough trouble that we have to actually walk them out. So those are the ones that people really need to train for and get accustomed to carrying a pack. But it is such a great experience to go and sleep outdoors where there's no lights and no pollution and no, you know, traffic, and just hear what you know, the world really sounds like.
Right, hear the quiet of the world.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds great. So that's a really good variety. It was a great overview. Thanks, by the way. And so it does sound like there's a lot of variety in there for people at their different fitness level, different comfort level, and maybe even a chance to kind of move up to the different levels as, you know, somebody that hasn't camped or hiked or done anything before. Sort of that first trip that you described, the hotels, the wine tasting, the day hike, that seems like a good place to start. And then, and then I imagine that, you know, I'm sure you've had women go on that, and then they decide, well, I want to do something a little more strenuous or a little more challenging, and because that's human nature, right, to find the next challenge.
Absolutely. And it is great, because once people go on Call of the Wild trips, they kind of fall in love with the experience and the company, and we're very different than the large outfitters that kind of feel impersonal. They'll, like, properly execute an itinerary, but then the next year you're like, who am I going to go with now? And they may or may not even come to your mind.
Right.
But the thing that I noticed, too, is that women will say, well, you've seen me on this trip. Do you think I can do that trip?
Interesting.
And interesting that they need the validation.
Yeah.
But they also believe me, because I'm not the kind of person that just says, oh, you can do absolutely anything. Well, let's talk about it. You know, where are you now? What kind of hikes are you doing now? What's your fitness? Do you have any injuries? And just be realistic, but also be ambitious. So it's like ambitious realism.
Right, right. That's, I mean,
So when I tell them, like, yeah, I really think you can do that, or yeah, you need to train some more, but that's within your realm. So one of those gals is coming on Kilimanjaro this year.
Oh,
and
wow.
That'll be a really big deal for her.
That's great. Well, man, you offer a great service. Thank you for sharing your story and where you got to and some of these insights into pushing through fears and pushing through comfort zones and the kind of the freedom it gives on the other side of that. And I can definitely tell by just the way you talk and the way you talk about it that you're intuitive into what people need. So as you said, there's some that need the just go,
this tough love,
those you need to talk through it a little more and explore a little bit. And that's important because, you know, again, everybody's different. So I think you have a definite passion for what you're doing and some good insights and some good intuition.
Yeah, I appreciate your comments. Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. So we are out of time. So I want to listeners, again, the website is callwild.com. And this is Emily Cortez that I've been chatting with. Emily, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
Great. And listeners, just be sure to tune in next week.
You've been listening to Create Your Reality on Amazing Women of Power Radio, the world's leading positive programming network, powered by Raven International. Tune in next Monday at 11:30 a.m. Pacific Time to hear more from Lynn and her guests. If you want to re-listen to this show or previous shows, you can find them at createyourrealityradio.com or createyourreality.podomatic.com. Thanks for listening.